So this is the Inclusive Activism Podcast. I'm your host, Rowdy Duncan, and today I've got Luke Black. And Luke Black is one of the folks I met in the community out about kind of doing the stuff that we do here. You're going to have to forgive us at the beginning because my dogs, TNT, are fighting and playing among us. So I'm sure as we kind of get into the depths of why diversity and inclusion is incredibly interesting, they'll be lulled to sleep to some degree. But for the beginning, that'll be happening in the background a little bit. But I'd met Luke Black when he was doing some white privilege workshops with the Arizona Community Action... What's that last A?
Association.
Thank you. All right, yes. Arizona Community Action
Association. I don't even remember anymore.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here. Get to just talk and... So thanks for that opportunity.
Yeah,
I mean, the question of like, where did I get started in this? What kind of set me down this road? Honestly, I don't really have what I would call like a really spectacular story. And I think that that's pretty indicative of how folks get involved in this movement, especially folks that come from positions of privilege, you know, whiteness, you know, maleness, things like that is...
You know what's funny is I think people of marginalized backgrounds, though, are completely fascinated with that story. So when you tell that, like, I would say a good portion of our audience would be like, no, I would disagree. I totally want to know what is that and where did that come from?
It's weird. It's like, it wasn't like there was this blinding light moment or this, like... You know, I got shot by, you know, the police and in that moment recognized that, hey, I mean, I needed to fight against some of this stuff. I mean, a lot of this just came because I was in spaces with folks that were doing this work, that were talking about whiteness, that were talking about privilege, that were talking about racism and homophobia, just male privilege, and I just was sitting in these spaces with these folks that were having this conversation and slowly but surely began to make the connections between who I was and some of these things that we were talking about. And as I began to do that, ultimately there was a question of, well, are you going to acknowledge that this is real? Are you going to believe this? Or are you going to dismiss this? I was encouraged by some really good people, some folks that I would consider mentors, elders, for lack of a better word, to continue to look into this stuff and to continue to challenge myself. And that really put me down this road. And without a doubt, it's been a lot of work. It's been a beautiful journey, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it has come to mean a lot in my life. It's been grounding. I mean, it's where I want to be.
Who do you think was someone that was like really instrumental and transformational in you kind of coming to that stumbling understanding of your like privilege and power? Remember we talked about somebody once was that kind, patient person that let you ask your just dumbass questions over and over again.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was really blessed really by two folks specifically. Martin Friedman, who is a organizer, a community organizer, does a lot of racial justice stuff out of Seattle, really all over the country. And you know, Martin really was very gentle but firm in really giving me this space. And Martin also created the space for me to ask a lot of questions. I mean, Martin is white. He has had to wrestle with this stuff his whole life. And he was very gracious in giving me that space to ask what would be questions that would be really challenging to ask in other spaces. And the way that he gave me that space was gentle and firm, but it was also always encouraging me to dive deeper into this stuff.
And so when you say firm, like tell me a little bit more, like
sure. So, you know, Martin wouldn't let me get away with laziness.
Okay.
So much about ultimately how we work against whiteness and how we decenter our minds and how we create these new frameworks of thinking, that requires a lot of energy and it requires a lot of time, and it's really easy to get lazy, right? It's really, really easy to expect immediate returns. It's really easy to think that we're the ones that decide what is enough. and to be like, well, I put in my work, now I should be accepted, and now I shouldn't have to do this work anymore. And that's sloppy thinking, and it's laziness. And
so he was kind of like the person that introduced you to this process.
Right.
That it's
right,
ongoing, that it's always happening.
Right, right, without a doubt. And so Martin was very instrumental in that. And the other person I would really want to highlight is Dr. Jeanette Rodriguez, who teaches up at Seattle University, and really, really powerful, amazing Latina woman of color who works in an institution that is centered in whiteness and Catholicism, but yet she has found a way to really speak from a position of strength. And she has this saying that I have unpacked and continue to come back to in this journey that I am on. You know, Dr. Rodriguez always said, nothing changes until it changes. And that statement seems simple at first, but until we recognize that nothing changes, we do not change, systems do not change, institutions do not change, practices that we see at place do not change until we change them. Until you and I change ourselves, until we change those systems, until we change those institutions, nothing changes, right? And so Dr. Rodriguez was so instrumental in demanding that I continue in this process, right? Without giving me an inch to like fall back on and say I've done enough, mm-hmm. right? Because there has to be this constant demand, and she was willing to make sure that demand was rooted in me. And so for those two, I'll be grateful really for the foundation that they gave me that still continues to I see in my life.
Yeah. So I know you have a couple different degrees. You've got transformational leadership and what's the other one?
Justice studies.
Justice studies. Okay. Yeah. Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
But you know, they do give you a unique worldview.
Sure.
So which came first, and then, you know, how did the one inform the thinking of the other? And then, so starting with the one and the thinking of the other, and then I'll probably ask you a question about how they blend,
sure,
how you see
sure,
that overlap.
Sure. Right, so transformational leadership came first. That was up at Seattle U. Got into that program because I really wanted to do life coaching. And that program sells itself as...
So before you get started with it,
yeah.
Like what had you interested in life coaching? I mean...
Right,
like kind of the
right.
concept of like the guy that has to tell people to get their shit together.
Right, but see, that's the thing. Like, so when I was 30, when I turned 30, I decided that I was going to do this, essentially like a life exploration. I hired a life coach to say like, what is it that I should be doing with my life?
Okay,
right. The ultimate question of privilege: what should I do with my life?
That's funny.
And it is. Yeah. It is the question that we do. All of our value comes down to what we do with our lives, right? And it's such a question of privilege. But I asked it, and because I didn't know any better. And in this process of unpacking and doing all of these tests and having to write all these essays, you know, came up. The results essentially came back that I should be doing life coaching myself because I really wanted to help people work through their challenges and work on finding meaning in their lives. And this degree that Seattle U was offering was sort of rooted in how people can come to understand themselves and make significant transformational changes in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started down this road of how can I bring myself to this work in a way to help people become the people that they want to be. It didn't really take very long for me in this process to move away from that. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was also beginning to explore what racism was and what white privilege was at that time. And
so was that like in something?
No, nah, well, it just coincided. I, you know,
like leadership
yeah,
and racism,
well,
was that a...
Well, Martin, I was working with Martin at this point on just unpacking whiteness, really. And it just happened to be at the same time that I was at Seattle U. And luckily for me, there were professors like Dr. Rodriguez in that program who were able to recognize the work that I was doing in myself around whiteness and then point me in some directions on how I could actually apply that in that degree program. And so what happened was I moved away from my focus on how do we as individuals create change in our life and find meaning in our life, which in and of itself is a fantastically white question. White people love to ask, like, what's my individual purpose in this life?
Right.
Right? It is such a white question. So how do we move away from that? And
although it's not just limited to white people.
This is true.
Kind of like dealing with whiteness or, you know, trying to conform to the notion of what society should be in the
right.
Would like to get to the place where they can ask themselves that question.
Right. But the question itself is rooted in individualism.
Yes.
Which itself is a creation of whiteness so that, we unpack individualism and its connection to whiteness all day long. But
maybe we will.
Yeah, for right now, right? I mean, So moved away from that, and they were really good at helping me see that this transformational stuff needed to happen in institutions and it needed to happen in systems. And really got me to the point of beginning to start to think about systems and what that looks like. And so when I was finished with my degree there at Seattle U, it was really about how do we work inside institutions and systems to transform them? How do we work against oppression? How do we look at exploitation and things like power and privilege as, you know, rooted in things like whiteness and racism and homophobia, and how do we work against them, right? So how do we make those, how do we transform systems? So that was the first degree. That was, and then I came back to Arizona, and you know, my degree from ASU really started because I just had free time.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I might as well, which...
get a master's in justice studies.
Right, which...
My Tuesdays are free.
Right, because it was literally like that conversation. But what I ultimately ended up studying and really focusing on in the justice studies program was essentially looking at privilege as a whole. Not specifically looking at white privilege, but ultimately looking at privilege as intersectional. And that, you know, we'll talk about that a lot. I mean, because, you know, we can talk about specific types of privileges in and of themselves, but ultimately we can't do any of the work that we want to do unless we're willing to take an intersectional approach. And so really started to look at privilege and power as intersectional and then began to unpack that. And so that's kind of what I focused on in my studies.
And it's interesting because, you know, like I told you before, this podcast is really about leadership and how is diversity and inclusion a form of leadership. And even though that necessarily wasn't the intention of your program, you still found that in that space. Because you have this really unique worldview with justice studies and with transformational leadership. Like, how do you feel like that kind of like informs your perspective and worldview on this stuff? Like, how do the two interplay and intermingle?
Right. I mean, all the time, to be honest, and in ways that are complicated to navigate. Ultimately, I think there are clear messages that anybody that decides to get involved in this work and decides to spend time rooted in community with folks of color, with LGBTQ folks, with immigrants, any time spent there where you are listening, truly listening, will teach you that folks of privilege have an opportunity to step back and allow folks from those groups to step into leadership roles. One of the great challenges of coming from social locations that are rooted in power, be it whiteness or maleness or heteronormativity or American or rooted in Christianity, right? These are all social locations that are deeply rooted in power, and power is deeply rooted in and comes from oppression. So ultimately we can make that connection that to occupy these social locations is to have gained them because of oppression, right? Ultimately for folks that sit in those positions, one of the things that we can do when it comes to leadership is to step back and allow folks of color, allow folks who are queer, allow folks that have come from marginalized groups to step into those leadership roles, which I will tell you is a challenge. I mean, most people, you know, when we get into like, what can I do? Like, how can I help? How can I be a better person, right? How do I contribute to this work? Don't really like to be told right off the bat, well, the first thing you can do is shut up
and stand listen by this person and say
and yes. Just stand here and support what this person is saying, yeah. Right? That's a challenge. That's a huge challenge, but...
Because it's like the what about me.
It is. Yeah. It is. But really, I mean...
Well, let me dial into that for a second, because I actually think that's interesting, right? Because the immediate concern is that you want to be out there rallying, pushing, being the voice, right? You know, kind of like there's this envision of like action and activism, right?
Right.
And that you want to plug into that right away. But then people tell you, right? They're like, well, what I need you to do is stand behind me, like, shut up, and just nod your head to everything that I say. And then when somebody asks you a question, be like, I don't know. Ask this person. So in that moment of like, so you were in that place and you shut up and you listened. What did you get out of that?
What did I get out of that?
Because that's the thing that's not talked about, right? It's the, because everybody's like thinking that they need to show up in this space, but there's something incredibly valuable. It's like for me, I can tell you one of the things I've gotten. Because when you look at systems, for me, I feel like the most oppressed person in a system, when there's oppression in a system, the system's unsustainable. The system's bound to fail because it can't stay the way that it is. It's not equitable, it's not in balance. Nature, in general, looks for balance and needs coexistence, right? So the best people to help us with our systems out of balance are the most oppressed people, because that's where the most acute need is. I don't know if that was immediately to front of mind when you were in that
right.
space, but
right.
you were in this space, you sat back, you listened, you nodded, you did, you know, your work in that way, but then you found value in that. Like, tell me about that. What was
well, that? Yeah, so how to find value in that space? I mean, for me, like, we got to back up a lot in order to understand how even, like, the value add, like, how I get value out of that space actually isn't really happening, for me at least, it's not really actually happening in that space. Beyond just getting to watch folks that I love and care about step into to leadership roles and seeing them respected in communities. I mean, that's a value add right there. I
yeah,
love that, right?
Yeah.
I love getting to watch those folks that I love in those
or your
spots,
community,
right?
Or
my community. Yeah, in my community, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, like, and you know, this is just something that is always in the forefront of my mind and forever be in this, is that whether we want to know this or not, pretty much everything that we are taught as Americans, as white folks, from the get-go is rooted in lies and rooted in a very specific way of interpreting history that ultimately moves us away from what really has happened historically and moves us away from who we are as people, robs us of connections to our culture, to our heritage, and asks us to participate in society as nothing more than individuals. Or in the rare chances we're invited to participate in society, we're invited to participate in roles that have historically been very oppressive. So we're invited to participate as Americans.
As a president.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And so if we back up way back there and we say that like everything that we are, everything that we've been given and taught ultimately led us down a road that is untruthful. Right? I don't even know if it's an untruthful word. It's not truthful, right?
Not
so
real, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not real. So any work that we do to get to that root and to begin to start understanding who we really are, that is the beginning of a creation of an identity that we can all, hopefully, like, we can be proud of. And one of those things about that identity that hopefully, that I find something that is very life-giving, is learning that I am not an individual first. It's learning that I am part of a community, and that my value and what makes me happy And what really brings significant meaning to my life is my participation in community. And so even asking the question, what do I get out of this that is life-giving, that question doesn't make sense to me anymore, right? Because what I get by stepping back and allowing folks of color, folks that have been marginalized, to occupy that role is that my community is strengthened. The folks that I love and care about, the folks that who have been denied those opportunities are given those opportunities and get to step into those roles. And because I see myself in community with them, we are all enriched because of that. At the individual level, I only get that because I'm in the community. But that takes like a lot. You got to go way back to the beginning. Right, and have to start working on this decentering and this reimagining of who we are as people, as community members, and not as individuals. I mean, there it is again, right? There's that individualism thing again.
Well, but it's interesting, right? Because like in the thing that you were looking to find, you found that you didn't ever really need to ask what that was anyway.
Right?
It was your disconnection that made you ask what's my purpose and why am I here? And then being together and serving others and being in community and fighting for justice together, you found that you don't need to worry about those things because you weren't a you were just part of a we and nobody told you about
right.
So it's the funny thing is, you know, all those questions you had immediately were answered.
It's true. I mean, so many of those questions simply become irrelevant. And once you start to unpack this stuff, once you begin to reimagine and clear the things out of your mind, you'd be surprised at all of the questions that at one point you thought were going to be questions where the answers were going to radically change your life, and you just realize that those questions don't really matter anymore.
I was totally just thinking, like, the answer to that question is, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I imagine like someone going up to the mountaintop and finding some yogi and being like, what's the point of that? It's like, well, it just doesn't matter.
They're not even questions anymore. They're like, what do circles smell like? And you're just like, who cares, right? Yeah,
it's not of primary importance. There's much bigger things to get out there and do.
That will conclude part one of the podcast with the interview with Luke Black. We will release the next section of the podcast with Luke in a few days or so, depending on how many portions that we have. If this made you thought of something, if that was interesting, there's something that you want to like let us know about, you can go ahead and leave us a voicemail at the Inclusive Activism Hotline, which is 860-576-9393. Again, that phone number is 860-576-9393. At this time, we do have an outgoing message, so please leave your voicemail that drops right into Google Drive. I pull that into the podcast and then kind of talk back in real time with you, which is really kind of fun and cool. If you have questions, you can ask me. If there's a scenario that you want me to get follow up with Luke, I'd be more than happy to do that too. Or if you have a topic that you'd like me to explore based on our conversation, I'd be happy to do that as well. Also, please remember that your feedback, your sharing, your listens are all critically important to this project. So please rate and review us on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews make a huge difference. It keeps us visible, it helps folks find us, and then helps us build the community even further. Also, please share this with anyone that you feel as though would appreciate the podcast. The topics are what we're attempting to do here. You can catch us on Google Play under Inclusive Activism. We're also on Stitcher as the Inclusive Activism Podcast. Please review us, rate us. All those things make huge differences. And again, if you're interested in booking me or bringing the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can always do so at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. Or you can learn about me, this organization, a little bit more at www.inclusiveactivism.com. Thank you so much for your time, and I really appreciate everything you do. We'll be right back.